All right, everybody, we're back. And I'm Karen Hartglass. You're listening to It's All About Food. And remember, you can find out a lot more about me and my work at responsibleeatingandliving.com. That's my nonprofit. And I put up all kinds of lovely vegan recipes. I have a blog called What Vegans Eat. Have you been there recently? All I do is show you what I eat every day, because so many people have asked me, what do you eat? Now, you know, in pictures and text, and often linked to recipes. So I make it really easy if you want to try and make some of the dishes that I'm showing. Great. And that's responsibleeatingandliving.com. And you can also email me at info@realmeals.org. My next guest, I've had her on the program before, and it's Robin. She's Robin Lamont, Broadway actress, private investigator, and assistant DA, and a novelist. And we're going to be talking about her most recent book, The Trap. Robin, how are you?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. I just finished reading your book. It was great.
Well, thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah.
It's great to be talking with you.
Yeah. So, you know, one of the things I was just talking about with Matthew Lieberman about this recent Idaho ag gag law, which was declared unconstitutional, is...
Yes. Awesome.
It is awesome. We can't say it enough. There was a actual section in the judge's ruling that cited Upton Sinclair and his book, The Jungle, which came out in the early 20th century, a fictional story about the horrors going on in Chicago slaughterhouses. And I thought, that's why your books are so important.
Well, you know, I'm a big, big believer in stories and the power of stories. I think they have an emotional power that engages people. And then kind of when you step in a character's shoes, you're brought on a journey. And that's what Upton Sinclair did. He brought people into the world of a slaughterhouse through a fiction story. And I mean, the book had an enormous impact. So, yeah, he's a hero.
He is a hero. His book, however, was, there was no happy ending in his book. It was depressing from start to finish. And it was, I was nauseous in my stomach reading it the entire time. But it did make tremendous change, and that is good.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think when it comes to animals, unfortunately right now, there are very few happy endings. You know, the overturn of the, well, almost overturn of the Idaho ag gag law is a happy ending. But what I'm trying to do in my series is embed the facts of what is really happening for animals in a fictional story. And it's pretty difficult if you're relying on the truth to have a happy, giggly ending. You can maybe have a satisfying ending to each book, but the struggle continues.
Yeah, I like the way you sprinkled different statements that were reflecting current policy and current truth throughout this story.
Go ahead.
And it does have, fortunately, a happy ending. I don't want to give that away, but to some degree it does, and it's just nice. So people can learn about a lot of horrors, and in a very thrilling and in fun way. Fun, it's not a good word, but I did enjoy reading it. Because it's a good story.
Thank you, and that's the whole point. I mean, I want people to enjoy the story. That's
all right. Now, the story is about. Well, why don't you give me a brief summary? It's about our wildlife agency policies and hunting. Hunting's a very hot topic right now, and I think we'll dig a little bit more into that right now, and what people say. The reasons people give for needing hunting or not needing hunting, and then what really goes on, because apparently, according to your story, there's a lot that goes on that is not necessarily legal, not necessarily beneficial, and people don't know about it.
That's true. That's really true. Well, in the trap, the Kinship Series main investigator, Jude Brannick, is sent into Idaho, of all places, where a government agent with the Wildlife Services has been found caught and dead in his own trap. So that's how it begins. And in her search to help find the real killer, she encounters Wildlife Services, which is a true existing agency with the U.S. government, who it's a part of the USDA, and their mission, stated mission, is to help humans and wildlife coexist. But when you look deeper and read some of the exposés and read a little bit more about the agency, they're really far from that. It's a very opaque agency paid for by tax dollars, and they're engaged in some really nefarious activities when it comes to killing animals.
Now, a number of things that go on is that we have ranchers that are growing animals to feed people, like cattle, and sometimes sheep, and they don't want their animals attacked by wild animals, so they use these rules to shoot some of these animals in the wild, wolves and coyotes.
Mm.
And it's all to promote the growing of animals to feed people, which is something I don't think is a good thing to begin with for lots of reasons.
Yep. So for me, animal agriculture is one of the most powerful economic driving forces in our country, and we do, or throughout the world, and we do an enormous amount, to hide what is really going on. Matthew Lieberman was talking earlier about the ag gag laws. Well, I, as a suspense writer, I think these huge corporate and government structures at the root of animal exploitation are great foils in a thriller and suspense novel, so I tend to go after them.
Absolutely. It's just like the Republican candidates right now are great material for comedians. you have great material for thrillers, but it's scary because it's real. So I wondered throughout the book how much was based on real occurrences and what you actually made up. So maybe you could tell us of something that was true that you based some of it on.
Okay, yeah. I would pretty much say that all of what happens to animals in the trap is true or has been documented somewhere. I relied an awful lot on an expose by Sacramento Bee journalist Tom Knudsen, who wrote a series of pieces, and they read like a thriller. He interviewed ex-Wildlife Services agents who told him what was really going on behind the scenes. One such thing is that Wildlife Services kills about 4 million animals a year. And that's what's reported. Now, they engage in a lot of very brutal trapping and hunting methods that are not allowable in the individual states by regulation. For instance, even in Idaho, aerial gunning is not permitted by state regulation. Poisoning coyotes, wolves, bears, that's not allowable under state regulations, but because the Wildlife Services is a federal agency, they're exempt from all of those rules.
Hmm.
I deal in the book with a practice that I found just awful, which is in the trapping. You know, when these agents set traps, they may set a trap for a coyote or a wolf, but animals don't read the sign on the trap. They don't, they're simply drawn to the bait.
Mm-hmm.
So an enormous number of unwanted, untargeted animals get caught in these traps, including domestic pets. And there are quite a number of instances where families lost pets who were trapped in a leghold trap, or they were poisoned by these M44 cyanide capsules, and the owner had to watch their dog die, writhing on the ground in agony from these cyanide capsules. So it's pretty brutal stuff, but it does go on.
It's brutal to companion animals that people love. It's brutal to wild animals that people don't know, but deserve to live and deserve to live without horrific cruelty and just a horrible, horrible death.
I agree.
Yeah. So your book exposes a lot of this, and I'm just constantly, I'm speechless because I don't understand why humans want to do this and create so much violence, and we have such a capacity to create tools that will do so much violence. The traps we create just become worse and worse and more painful. And not only are these animals unnecessarily killed, but they are tortured in horrific ways.
They do suffer. And, you know, I'm trying in these novels to create a sense for, you know, my main characters, the investigator here, Jude Brannick. She's at a loss, like you are, to understand why and how this is possible. I think at one point in the book, she is brought out into the wilderness to see this incredible, endless acreage of miles and miles of Idaho mountains and forests and streams. And she says, where do the animals get to live? If they don't get to live free of suffering here, where do they get to live? And she's at a loss herself.
Now, some will tell us that hunting is necessary. In fact, I just saw an article in the New York Times yesterday about hunting in Africa, saying that because of what happened to Cecil the Lion and the outcry that happened because of the trophy hunting, they're saying that conservation efforts could actually do damage in this area. We hear a lot of people talking about how hunting is actually necessary in order to control wildlife. But I think you even mention in the book the importance of wolves and how the area was actually degraded because of the lack of wolves.
Yeah, for sure. Until the mid, I guess, 1990s, the gray wolf was pretty much extinct from the northern Rockies, and that's their natural, a good habitat for them. And until they were reintroduced and put on the endangered species list, which they now have been removed from in the northern Rockies, they weren't there. And a lot of the biologists in Yellowstone found with the reintroduction of the wolf that the entire landscape began to come back. Birds and fish and small mammals that were being eaten by the prey of the wolf were now coming back, and it was a richer landscape than without wolves. So I honestly believe that, you know, there are ways to coexist without trapping and hunting these animals.
I believe it too. And you also mentioned, and I believe this is true of all non-human animals, that they don't kill for sport.
Yes.
Like humans do.
Well, we do an awful lot to animals for sport, don't we?
Yeah.
No, animals don't kill for sport. They kill for survival. And there's quite a bit of evidence that shows that when we as humans go in and disrupt the packs of these predators, whether it's wolves or coyotes, we actually do more damage to our own self-interests. That wolves, they operate in a pack, and once the pack is disrupted by the killing of one or two, the juvenile wolves, without a family, are actually much more likely to go after livestock when the pack can't teach them to hunt the deer and the elk that is their natural prey.
Hmm. Oh, my.
Oh, my. I think, you know, the other thing is that one of the biggest problems for our country's wildlife is we're taking their habitat.
Mm-hmm.
We're taking it. And for them to go outside what we consider our appropriate boundaries for wolves or coyotes, it's because we're encroaching on their land.
Now, a lot of people would say that population, human population, is the problem, and I won't disagree. There certainly are a lot of people on the planet, but we could be doing a much better job, and we could be living a lot more efficiently, and I think living happier and healthier as a result if we weren't using so much land to grow plants to feed animals that ultimately feed people.
Well, I'm with you there. And, you know, one of the reasons that Wildlife Services is so active out west is because they're working basically as an extermination service on behalf of the ranchers. Ranchers who are grazing their herds on public land.
Oh, thank you for bringing this up. I wanted to bring this up next, and here you go. Let's talk about those public lands.
Yeah. Well, we all knew or had heard this study from, what was it, Cleavon Bundy, who refused to pay his grazing fees to the Bureau of Land Management and basically got away with it. By standing there with his guns and his posse and driving off the agents for land management. But most of the ranchers out west raising sheep and cattle primarily are using public lands to graze their cattle. And they pay a fraction of what it would cost if they owned the land themselves.
You rarely hear about this. And most people don't know about it, and it's infuriating. I've heard the term welfare ranching because these are public lands. They belong to all of us citizens of the United States, and they are being rented for literally next to nothing, pennies, to graze animals. And then the land pretty much is seriously degraded after these animals come through, and the ranchers don't have to do anything to improve it. And it's called welfare ranching. There are people that are always annoyed that some of us on the left primarily want to help people that are poor, people that don't have opportunity, and welfare payments, variety of different ways, help support them. For food, for education, for health care, etc. And yet we don't talk about this other form of welfare, really, which is using citizens' land that we're renting for next to nothing for these people to use and abuse.
Absolutely. It's ruining the environment, and it goes even beyond that. It's basically government subsidies for the ranchers. They get the use of government, private, public land. If and when a wolf or predator takes one of the livestock, they're generally reimbursed for the loss of that livestock. So they get paid back. It's not about them losing that much money. And now you have Wildlife Services. That's a federal agency that's basically doing all of their extermination of predators for them on public land. So it's all the same story to me. It's all about, you know, the subsidy of meat, of cheap meat. Because if the ranchers had to use their own land, they had to take care of the wolf problem on their own, hopefully with humane methods, then beef would be, you know, extraordinarily expensive. But our government subsidizes it because one of the USDA's missions is to promote agriculture along with animal agriculture. So
you mention in your book at this one particular hearing in the story where people were talking about hunting that there are more humane ways to keep wild animals away from ranchers' animals, but they're too expensive.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. There was a study done in California, a project set up with the humane methods, deterrent methods, basically. They include guards, dogs. You need human herders, special lighting, something called fladry, which is tiny little flags set along a fence. Will actually keep wolves and coyotes away. But these methods are expensive. If you're going to pay a herder to circle your sheep at night, it's going to be much more expensive. And that's why ranchers don't generally do it. But in this one particular area in California, they stuck with the humanely deterrent methods, and out of, I think, 27,000 sheep, only four were lost in 2012. So it's a tiny, tiny percentage, and it's possible.
Now, the other part that feeds into all of this is fear.
Ah.
And people are afraid, and in some cases, their fear is not justified.
Yeah. I really tried in the book to, because my investigator was going into the heart of hunting and trapping land and the culture, the mindset of coyote derbies and wolf derbies where they like to kill them. I really tried to dig into that mindset and try to figure out what was going on. And there's quite out west, there's a real demonization of wolves. It's really gone back for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
But my personal belief is that demonizing the wolf makes him that much more of a great target. I mean, to kill. You look at Cecil the lion. Why does somebody want to go and kill a lion?
Yep.
Because it makes him feel like a warrior.
Mm-hmm.
Makes him feel like a man. I don't know. It's exciting. The bigger, more ferocious the animal, the bigger the challenge, and the more the ego gets from the killing of the animal. That's my personal belief, but I think wolves fit that bill.
Have you heard the recent story about a hiker in Yellowstone National Park that was attacked by a grizzly bear?
I did vaguely hear about it. I don't know the circumstances or the facts, but I was sort of led to believe that perhaps this hiker didn't use reasonable precautions, and it was a mama bear protecting her cubs.
Yeah, so I wanted to bring it up in the earlier segment because I was thinking this family of bears really needs a good lawyer.
Indeed.
And maybe. It's funny, but it's also sad because these non-human animals are being accused. At least it's believed that this one bear attacked this hiker, and now they're holding a family of bears and checking the DNA that they found to see if indeed this one bear killed this hiker, and I'm thinking this bear, you can't question the bear, you can't ask, you know, what her motive was. She has no defense, she has no one defending her, and I'm sure that this hiker was partially to blame, as you think. But we have this fear of big animals, and unfortunately, the bear will likely be put down.
Yeah, it's not an even playing field, is it?
No, it's not. So, you've written The Trap, and I recommend it. Anyone who likes a good thriller, and especially if you know people that aren't really conscious or aware of what goes on with animals in this country, you might give them this fun book to read, as along with your other book, The Chain, which was another exciting read and talked about animals and factory farms. And what's next, Robin?
Well, this is a series, so I'm embarking on book three, which will deal with animal testing.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Now, you worked as a private investigator. Did you ever work in any of these arenas?
No. But I did work undercover for a number of years, so I tried to bring that into The Trap in terms of what it's like to be an undercover investigator and have to maintain your cover when there's really nobody around to protect you, and how tenuous it feels. And yeah, it's dangerous.
It is dangerous. Well, I'm kind of looking forward to the next book. I'm sure it's going to be pretty bleak because I know that we do a lot of horrible tests on non-human animals, and some would say they're necessary, but if you really look into, I think the majority of testing that's done, it's not necessary. It might be debatable that some of it is necessary. I'm not quite sure, but it's not something that I support. And it's just another thing that we do as humans that I'm not particularly proud of.
I will try to give you, if not a happy ending, a satisfying one. They are possible. Look at the ag-gag law in Idaho. Happy endings are possible.
Happy endings are very possible. Thank you, Robin, for your latest book, and for joining me on It's All About Food.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
It is, and I know we keep talking about it, but we are going to get together and share a meal one day soon.
Absolutely.
Okay, that'll be fun. All right, take care.
Thank you.
Thank you. You've been listening to me. I'm Karen Hartglass, and this has been It's All About Food. My last guest was Robin Lamont, the author of the new book, The Trap, part of the Kinship series. And you can find out more about both my guests today at my website, responsibleeatingandliving.com, where you'll be able to listen to the archives of these shows and very soon transcripts, because we do transcribe our shows. Thanks for joining me, and remember, have a delicious week.